You know, there was something we used to do on every single episode of Planet Money. We called it the Planet Money Indicator. Basically, Jacob Goldstein, who was our blogger at the time, would trundle into the studio here, and he would give us a single number.
Today's Planet Money Indicator is 0.8%, 49,445, negative 0.5%.
Sometimes we even got a little creative with the indicator.
Kestenbaum, you want to do the honors?
Oh, really? Oh. Today's Planet Money Indicator is...
What was that?
That is the world premiere of a little opera we like to call the Case-Shiller 20-City Composite Index of Home Values.
Oh, of course.
And it made sense to do the Planet Money Indicator because this was right after the financial crisis, and the world felt like it was changing. Literally every day, there was some number that around here at Planet Money, we would go like, oh my God, I can't believe that. Now, of course, things gradually settled down. The numbers stopped changing so fast, and we stopped doing the indicator. But today, at least for this episode, we are bringing it back. Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Robert Smith. And today on the show, the return of the Planet Money Indicator. Stay with us.
Planet Money is supported by Squarespace, providing creative tools for individuals and businesses to create a website. With hosting, 24/7 support, domains, e-commerce, and more, Squarespace enables people to share their stories, show their photographs, sell their products, and reflect who they are online. Visit squarespace.com/planetmoney for a free trial.
For our very special indicator show, we asked several of the hosts and reporters here at Planet Money to go out and look for a number that said something to them, a number that taught us something about where our economy is today. Now, of course, there are a lot of good numbers out there. You probably hear them on the news all the time. There are more jobs being added month after month. Home prices are up. But when you look under the hood of the economy, you see in a lot of ways the crisis that started the whole Planet Money indicator, the crisis is still with us. In Planet Money Indicator tradition, first up, Jacob Goldstein.
Hi, Robert.
Hey.
That's what I always used to say when I came in for the indicator. Hi.
Hi.
Today's Planet Money Indicator, $3 trillion. Trillion with a T and an R.
That's a big number.
You know what it's going to be? It's the Fed. During and after the financial crisis, the Federal Reserve created $3 trillion out of thin air. So I'm talking, of course, about quantitative easing. This was this big project the Fed had to stimulate the economy during and after the crisis. And the basic idea was Fed creates all this money, puts it out there, get people spending, get the economy going again.
Yeah, this is part of the big history of the financial crisis. This, they refer to it as QE, QE1, QE2, QE3. It was this thing that every month you'd hear, oh, they're producing this much more money, billions and billions of dollars a month. And then they stopped creating the new money, and nobody talked about it anymore.
I talked to this guy, Alan Blinder, when I was putting together this indicator. He's a Princeton economist. He was the vice chairman of the Fed back in the 90s. And I asked him, where did that $3 trillion go?
Ah, this is the $64 billion or trillion-dollar question. The answer is, surprisingly, very surprisingly, basically all of it went to idle cash in the banks.
Idle cash in the banks basically means the Fed created all this money out of thin air, bought bonds from the banks. The banks took that money and sat on it and basically didn't do anything. And so it's not creating inflation because it's just sitting there in the banks. But it's likely that at some point, as the economy continues to improve, things really start humming again, banks will start lending more. That money will be out there more. And it will, you know, then potentially start driving up inflation. And that is what the Fed has to worry about. I mean, that's always the Fed's job.
What does the Fed do about this? They've never had this much money out there before.
Right. And in a basic way, they're facing the same challenge the Fed always faces, which is you want to put money out there to get the economy going. And then once the economy really starts taking off, you want to pull some of that money back before inflation gets out of control. But there's a couple reasons why it's a much harder job this time, right? The first reason is the magnitude is just much larger. There's a lot more money out there. And one of the things Blinder told me is That means even a small mistake by the Fed can have real large consequences out in the economy. The other reason, which I think is actually even more interesting slash kind of scary, is the Fed has never done this before. The Fed has never, ever done quantitative easing before. I talked to this other guy, an economist named David Blanchflower, who worked at the UK's central bank, the Bank of England, during the financial crisis. And he said, look, during the financial crisis, the central banks, the Bank of England, the Fed, were making it up as they went along. They didn't know what to do. They'd never seen this before. And Blanchflower is pro-quantitative easing. He thinks the Fed did the right thing. But he says, look, we were making it up during the crisis. And when it comes time to undo QE, to start taking that money out of the economy, the Fed is still going to be making it up.
And they don't have a nice chapter in a textbook to tell them what they should do. They've never done it before. They're struggling.
So the Fed doesn't know what's going to happen when they finally wind down QE?
Absolutely not. Sorry. They absolutely don't know.
That sounds terrifying.
I mean, it is terrifying.
Thank you, Jacob.
Thanks, Robert.
Up next in the Great Indicator Roundup 2015, we have Stacey Vanek Smith.
Hey, Robert.
Oh, your voice.
I know. The New York winter got the best of me finally.
Well, let's have a throaty, cold-like indicator.
Okay. The Planet Money indicator is 72%.
72%.
72%. U.S. taxpayers are on the hook for 72% of new U.S. mortgages. So in other words, if the people borrowing money to buy houses don't pay their money back, don't pay those loans back, the federal government will step up to make sure the lenders get paid back.
72% of new mortgages?
Yes.
Yeah, didn't we learn this lesson? I'm giving a weird deja vu about this.
Right. Well, I mean, this all goes back to 2008, the government bailout of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. You might remember Fannie and Freddie were these two big mortgage companies, and they would buy mortgages from banks and sell them to investors. But this is the key part. They guaranteed those loans. So if people paying those mortgage loans defaulted, Fannie and Freddie said to investors, we are on the hook for those mortgages. We will back them up.
And then, of course, when the housing bubble crashed, Fannie and Freddie were in trouble.
Yes, they went bust. The government swooped in, bailed them out for $187 billion, essentially took over the mortgage market.
And everyone at the time said, this is temporary. This is just crisis thinking here. We're going to bail them out temporarily, and then we're going to get the government out of the mortgage business. And yet, you're telling me 72% of mortgages are still guaranteed.
Yes, exactly. And these are new mortgages. 3 out of 4 new mortgages the government is guaranteeing. So I wanted to find out what's going on, why the government still basically owns this business. I put that question to Guy Sakala. He is the publisher of Inside Mortgage Finance.
Right now, it's kind of a moot point because there's such an important element of the mortgage market, and the housing market is still fragile enough. There are not many people who think we can exist without them.
So basically, Guy told me right now, without government support, it would be really, really hard for most people to get mortgages. And those mortgages would probably be more expensive, higher interest rates, things like that, if the government weren't guaranteeing that they would buy them up from banks. That, in turn, would push housing prices down. And I talked to Adam Levitin about this. He's a professor of financial regulation at Georgetown University.
The problem is that we've built a market. You know, home prices are based right now on an assumption of tremendous government support for the housing market. And that basically becomes like an entitlement for the middle class. Socially, politically, and economically, withdrawing that entitlement would be disastrous. The housing market has become really a market that's too big to fail.
What would happen if the government got out of the mortgage business tomorrow?
We would have Great Depression. Not Great Recession, Great Depression.
Now, I can understand, as someone who owns a house, I don't want anyone passing some sort of legislation that will make my house worth less, 10, 20, 30% less. I would be quite upset. But at the same time, I mean, come on, people, the whole point of going through a crisis is to learn that prices have to reflect reality. So is anybody just saying, like, look, we got to bite the bullet. We can't build another housing bubble.
Well, that's the other side of this. There's the economic side, and now there's the political side. There are a number of proposals in Congress to take steps to privatize Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, but they're basically not going to go anywhere, according to Guy Sakala. He says there's just no political will for this.
Because I've had, you know, discussions with staffers of a number of key congressmen, and they've all said that they've looked at this issue, and once they do, they say, oh my God, we'd be nuts to take a position on this. Let's avoid it at all costs. There's not a lot of upside to tackling this as a legislative issue.
And, you know, we have talked about this before on Planet Money. There is something that no one really quite wants to talk about, which is the federal government actually makes a profit off of Fannie and Freddie, because if people are paying off their mortgages, then the mortgage business makes money. It's a successful business right now.
Right. Right now, it is a successful business. They've paid back the $187 billion bailout, and the government's made a profit off of them of about $40 billion. So right now, we're kind of sitting pretty. But if things take a turn for the worse, if the housing market bottoms out again like it did, taxpayers will be on the hook for 72% of mortgages once again.
All right. We'll have many new indicators then. Thank you, Stacey.
Thanks, Robert.
Hope you feel better.
Me too.
And finally, of course, David Kestenbaum.
My Planet Money indicator is 5.5492637.
No, come on.
No, they don't measure. they do not measure it that precisely. The real number is 5.5%.
Which is the unemployment rate. What should I think about this?
Let me just say this. A few years ago, this number was a fantasy. I mean, literally, it was a fantasy.
It's what politicians said. When we get down to 5.5%.
It was a fantasy that I had. Because the unemployment rate back then was, like, this is like 2-3 years ago, was 8%. And me as a reporter, just having to cover this number that would sort of like refuse to go down, was just really grinding and sort of depressing. So I was so tired of this. I had this idea that we should fix this number. We should fix the unemployment rate somehow.
And this was a couple of years ago. A whole podcast was talking about what would it take to get down to 5.5%.
Yeah, I thought at least we could fix it in a computer model, like a model of the economy. You know, economists build these things out of like hundreds or thousands of equations and relationships and numbers. And you could just think of it like a snow globe version of the world economy, but stuck in a computer. And it's one where you have control over, right? So you could change it. So we wanted to see what would it take to get the unemployment rate back to something like what we actually have today. And it was a lot. So I went to visit this economist, Mark Zandi. He's chief economist for Moody's Analytics. He has one of these computer models in Pennsylvania. I was very excited to see it.
First of all, where is the model actually in this build? Like, where is it? We're looking at two computer screens. Where is the thing?
Excellent question. It moves. It's now sitting in Plano in a server farm. So
Plano, Texas, in some random building in the middle of nowhere or something. Have you ever gone to see it?
I've never seen it, no.
Now, an economic model, I mean, maybe you can look at it as a little bit like SimCity or something. You can change all these little variables. You can say, okay, what if the interest rates went up a little bit? What would the economy look like? Or if they went down, what would the economy look like? You can change all these little variables. Or, as you did, like,
yeah, we
really
went crazy.
Big
we decided we were just going to fix like all the major problems that were hanging around at the time. So one of the big ones was the European debt crisis, right? A lot of the governments had a ton of debt. You know, there was worry the entire euro thing was going to fall apart. So we just fixed that. Just a few keystrokes. We fixed it. Never mind how. Maybe we figured in the snow globe economy, people woke up in the morning and they heard this on the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. European leaders surprised the world today when they announced they found 1 trillion euros in the back of a couch in Brussels. This ends the continent-wide debt crisis.
I remember this now. Lakshmi was totally game to do these fake newscasts for us.
Yeah, we were worried that people wouldn't understand they were fake. You know,
we should just say right now,
that was fake.
That was fake.
Yeah. I called up Mark Zandi last week to talk about this idea that the money showed up in the back of a couch.
Oh, no, that did not happen, no.
Was that sort of true in that the European Central Bank created a bunch of new money?
Hey, you know what? I didn't even think of that. It was about €1 trillion, right? $1.3 trillion. So good point. They didn't find it in a car somewhere, but they figured out how to inject some real cash into the European economy. So yeah, I'll go along with that. Pretty close.
It seemed crazy at the time, but it actually came to pass.
No, and it happened again. Look, again and again, actually, what we stuck in the computer model, these crazy fantasies, they came to pass, just not quite as we had imagined.
In another unexpected development, the countries of the Middle East have signed a comprehensive peace accord. As part of the agreement, armies in the region deposited all their weapons in the Red Sea. In business news, the price of oil dropped by $20 a barrel.
It is amazing that in your fantasy world, the thing that you thought could never happen was oil dropping by $20 a barrel, and it dropped by...
It's dropped by $50 a barrel since then.
Which we could not have even conceived of. So it's kind of amazing, after all of this fantasy stuff, solving the European debt crisis, getting the price of oil down, you in this computer model had a number spit out, a number that would be the unemployment rate in this fantasy world, and it was?
It's basically what we have now in the real world, like mid-fives, 5.5%. And my question for Zandi when we talked last week was, are we done? Like, is this as low as it's going to go? How much lower can it go? And he said he thinks it can go a little bit lower. Economists have this term, full employment. Zandi defines it this way.
The idea is that, simply put, anyone who wants a job has a job, and anyone who wants more hours can get those hours.
He says we are not there yet. He thinks the basic unemployment rate, the number we always quote, that could go down a little bit lower. And he says there are also a lot of people sitting on the sidelines. You know, the unemployment rate only counts people who are looking for work. And there are a bunch of people who, since the financial crisis, have sort of dropped out and stopped looking. A bunch of those could still come back into the economy and find jobs. So he thinks there's still some way to go, but we're kind of close to full employment now. He says the computer model says we'll be there sometime next year.
With a little bit of luck, it could be even early 2016, maybe even late 2015. I mean, we are creating a lot of jobs. I mean, right now, in the last few months, job growth has been well over 300,000 per month. So at that pace, we'd be back to full employment by the end of the year.
And finally, this wound from the financial crisis would have been healed.
Yeah, finally. It'll feel really good.
You sort of violated one of the fundamental rules of the Planet Money Indicator by coming in with something optimistic. But we will allow it on this special show. Thanks, David.
You're welcome. I get no doubt. We'd love to hear what you think. You can send us email, planetmoney@npr.org.
Or you can tweet at us. We are @planetmoney. Now that we're almost done with the show, you should go on over and listen to another NPR podcast known as Alt Latino. It is a weekly dive into the world of Latin alternative music. It is entertaining and it is great. You can find it, Alt Latino, at npr.org/podcasts.
Wait, there's one more indicator I want
to make. Yeah.
We skipped agricultural machinery, tractors per 100 square kilometers of arable land.
Oh, get Jacob in here. What's the number?
Also, cereal yield, kilogram per hectare.
What, you're going to withhold the number? You're not going to say this? You're not going to tell us?
Here's another one we didn't do. Population in urban agglomerations of more than 1 million percent of total.
Our producer today is Fia Benin. I'm Robert Smith.
Energy production.
Say your name.
I'm David Kestenbaum.
Thanks for listening.